Streaming in this realm and beyond, you are listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DiPastro.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts.
I'm Peter Leonard.
I'm Rich Nicodem.
And I'm Dr. Dave DiProspero. And we're here to bring you all the information from the paranormal realm, from paranormal news and happenings to investigating techniques and technology. And we have it coming your way in just a second. Stay tuned.
If you have questions, news, requests, new technology you would like us to review, team updates, event updates, or if you would like to be a guest on our show, email us at submit@paranormalinvestigatorradio.com.
Submit already, would you? My, how these 2 weeks do fly by, don't they?
Absolutely do.
We had some fun stuff over the weekend. I went up to Fort Ontario, which is located on Lake Ontario, in the present-day city of Oswego.
This is in New York, by the way.
A lot of O's there, Pete.
I'm sorry. It was near a nuclear plant and a soy fertilizer processing place, which everybody kept looking at me like it was me. It was the one time it wasn't. I will tell you, though, with this upstate New York weather and the incredible heat, the breeze coming off of that little pond was something that was most enjoyable.
I can imagine.
It's a state-run fort, and the lady hosting the event, Stacy Jones, she's been working for, they said, about 3 years to actually get paranormal groups in there, so it just shows you that persistence pays off.
Amen.
So it was open to a few other paranormal teams. There were four of us. You know how we always love when we get out of the car, we're recognized right off the bat. Oh, there's Rick. I know those guys.
Infamous.
But we investigated right till about 2 o'clock in the morning. It was very nice outside, but as soon as you went in the buildings, you could feel the heat. As far as things happening, I would say the lower casemate was where it was at. Probably those on the group know that Alex scared the be-living Jesus out of a few of our female members down there. One of the phenomena, we just happened to be running the Frank's box, and the actual radio was getting exponentially louder and louder and louder, and we really didn't do anything to it. And he made the comment, "You must be getting agitated because you don't like loud sounds." And he stomped his foot. Just as he stomped his foot, he scared poor Kathy and Diane.
Oh, no.
The blood-curdling scream went out.
I just listened to the recording of it, and it was hilarious. He was very apologetic afterward, but...
Fortunately, I was in the dark. I think I almost punched myself in the jaw when my arms flailed outward. Worse than the Bad App episode there.
Oh, God.
But down there, there was a... it was all stone. Nothing reconstructed, no cannons, any. We heard very loudly a metallic sliding sound. The guns in there used to be on like a railroad type of rail where they would fire it, pull it back, fire it out. So it may have been an actual audible EVP.
How many people were present?
It was limited to 25.
Mm.
4 rippers.
Nice.
And I'll just leave it at that. It was a good time. They ordered pizza.
Anytime pizza's involved in an investigation, it makes it all the better.
Well, I know lately we've been relying on like the Frank's box a lot, mostly for our own personal entertainment, but
yeah.
We went old school with this. So we got about 12 hours of EVP audio sessions.
Oh, boy.
Just questions after question after question.
And people don't realize when they watch this stuff on TV that if you have 5, 6, 7 audio recorders rolling for 8 hours, that's a lot of hours of listening to largely nothing. Static and people's stomachs rumbling. And
that's the good thing with the Frank's box. At least you can make stuff up in your own mind as you're hearing it. But while I was having fun there, Rich was over in Lilydale with the great Jason Hawes and Steve Gonzalez.
From Ghost Hunters.
Gonzalez.
Is that how it's pronounced? I'm sorry.
Yes, yes.
I'm from upstate. We got our own language.
Use guys.
Use guys. Two Utes.
Yeah, it was. The weather held out really nice for us for those couple days. And, you know, I was concerned I was going to be one of those sweltering New York 93 degree, 89% humidity days. But Lilydale handled everything really well. Everything was great. They had a new sound guy there, thank God. So when we went in, he had everything connected, and they really upgraded their sound equipment, which made a big difference in presentation.
Good.
There's a lot of people that came back that seen Jason and Grant when they're there a few years back, and this presentation sort of blew them away. It was new. It had a lot of comedy stuff on it, but what really impressed me was some of the evidence that they showed. Full-body apparitions, some really great EVPs, stuff that they didn't have on previous presentations. But like I said, the comedy part was interesting because, you know, Jason and Steve and Grant, they're all pranksters. They like to, you know, when you're spending all those weeks on the road with each other, you kind of have to find some humor in things or you'll get on each other's nerves.
You bet.
And it was kind of funny because during the presentation, they had a spider run up Steve on the actual presentation. Everybody started laughing at that. And then there was a piece at the very end where Steve was in the room and... I guess he was a little gassy, and the cameras were rolling, and they all were walking out of there choking and bringing back in bottles of Febreze and stuff, so the crowd really had an amazing time with that. But the guys do a great presentation, they answered all the questions, and they're great with their fans, photographs, autographs, and everything, so it was a great event.
If any of you guys listening are from the Northeast, you should check out Lilydale. It's really a cool spiritualist community. It's a gated community. The buildings inside are all from the 1930s, 1940s, except for this giant amphitheater in the center, which is immense, holds hundreds of people. But they have, like, the Fairy Forest Trail, and they have...
Inspiration Stump.
Yep. Spiritualist gift shops, bookstores, and yeah, they're known for their hot dogs. They have good hot dogs there.
Yeah, be prepared to pay $10 when you get to the gate.
It's by Buffalo, New York, just in case anybody is curious. It's called Lilydale. It's a great place to check out.
There really is a gate. I was actually stunned when we
gated.
Got there and
yeah,
there was a gate. Usually it's just like a fence, but there was a physical gate.
No, it's very formal.
A physical building, and the people at the gate now have badges as security and everything.
Wow.
So, yeah, they've really taken a step up.
You know what shocked me when we were there is there was a house for sale. And all these houses, like the first floor is a storefront or where they do psychic readings or whatever. Second floor is living space. And, you know, they're like three-story Victorian homes. Good size, probably 2,000 square feet. That one sold for like $16,000.
Yeah, they're not expensive.
Not
at
all.
You need to be approved by the assembly, I guess.
Right.
In order to go in.
Right. Not just anybody can buy a house there, but... Definitely a fun place to visit.
Your gift needs to be proven.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a nice community. The people there are all good friends. They socialize there. They have mass there. They have a great coffee shop there. They have live acts performing. I mean, if you buy a house in Lilydale and become part of that community, you go up there and your kids come with you and everything, and it's really great.
They have a hotel up there, too, you could stay.
Haunted hotel, by the way.
That's right. Yep.
The Maplewood, very haunted.
Well, all in all, it seems like it was a very good weekend.
Did you stop at Tim Hortons?
No, actually I didn't. I left Saturday night as I had to get back. And no, there's no Tim Hortons. We did stop at a gas station, though, and get some great Little Debbies. But other than that...
It's a long story.
Yeah, we had the Lilydale hot dogs, though.
There's a great video of Pete up on YouTube driving home from Lilydale. Couple years ago, with a box of Tim Hortons munchkin or Timbits, I'm sorry, and he didn't quite like the flavors. So if anybody's up late at night, try and find Peter Leonard on YouTube.
That was a cross between a rant and a diabetic I don't even know what you would describe that as.
There was some dry heaving out the window.
Paranormal Investigator Radio, hosted by the grown investigators of the paranormal. Visit us online at www.growninvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Rich, and thank you for spending your Tuesday evening with Dave, Pete, and myself from RIP. We're glad you're here. Let's talk a little bit about news, won't we? Looking for ghosts in London? Who wouldn't be looking for ghosts in London? There's an apparition for that. That's a little play on the app word.
Oh, boy.
There's an app called Ghost Finder London. Now, this is actually kind of brilliant. I mean, I wish they had some of the apps like this for maybe for like New York or for the East Coast or whatever. Let me tell you a little bit about this. Ghost Finder London is a new application for your iPhone that allows users to locate and read about more than 300 haunted locations throughout central and greater London. Each site has been meticulously plotted on Google Maps, tied in with the individual phone's GPS. Now, come on, that is a great concept.
That is really cool.
I mean, you know, how much easier would that make our jobs if we were like, okay, let's go find a new haunted place in New York and pull up the app and start going through and then GPS it and come on.
But you know what? I see a pitfall to that. There's a lot of businesses out there that make a lot of money off of ghost tours. So with an app like that, you pretty much run yourself a ghost tour right from your phone.
Well, we had this discussion for about money in the paranormal, how sometimes we're asked to come and investigate and they want a ghost party.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, maybe we ought to charge for this if we're the entertainment. If they want us to come in and they want us to investigate to help them, obviously it's always free. But when we show up and they got cases of beer and pizza and then
families
over, come on, we want to learn. Come on, it's a ghost party. It's like, really? Hire a DJ for $250. Why shouldn't you hire a paranormal group to come and entertain you?
That actually happened to us a couple weeks ago. We get called frequently for cases around the area, around New York State. And this one family did call us for help, and when we showed up, it was a small party going on. They thought it was, Friday's entertainment.
The cold cuts were good.
Yeah, folks, so, you know, it don't sound like it's a rant or I'm complaining about it, because, like Pete said, the cold cuts were good, and they fed us, and they took good care of us. So, it was a good time for all. However, it was just a little surprise when we walked in. We're here to help the family. It's like, you're here to help us drink all this beer. And find a ghost.
Yep.
Okay.
Went from scary pants pooping to dancing, drinking, and eating.
Well, that happens.
Fine. So, they found the rotting carcass of Sasquatch someplace in Canada due to the recent flooding.
Thank God.
Really?
Yes. The legendary cryptid is believed to be a surviving gigant opithecus.
Gigantopithecus?
There you go.
There you go. I was giving him the dictionary explanationable thing over there.
Oh my goodness.
Found in the southern tip of Alberta.
Very popular vacation spot, I'm
reading this live.
Alberta, was that phonetic too?
Alberta. Could you imagine the stench coming off that if that really was a Gigantopithecus?
Gigantopithecus?
The carcass of Gigantopithecus?
So they found a carcass of what they believe to be a Bigfoot because of recent flooding. Is that the gist of it?
Yes, pretty much.
In Alberta, Canada?
Yes.
You know, guys, since we're talking about rotting carcasses,
yeah,
that kind of brings us to the next piece of news. And I know everyone out there in the listening audience is going to thank me. Because this information I'm about to share, someday could save their life.
Okay.
It's that important, Dave. Ready?
Yeah.
This is the 10 essentials for surviving the zombie apocalypse. The practical guide.
Oh, dear.
Okay? So get ready. Get your pen out. Whatever you need to do to record this, or write it down. Okay, number one, running shoes. Right? Okay.
Cardio is important.
Absolutely. We learned that tip from Zombieland. Absolutely.
You don't have to outrun the zombies. You just have to outrun the other people that you're with.
Which would be me.
Number two, granola bars. you're expending all this energy running from the zombies. You're going to have something to eat. Obviously, zombies aren't going to be looking for granola bars as their main snack.
Peter will substitute Twinkies for those.
Right.
For tasty cakes.
Number three, a head knocker. Or as we say in here, a Louisville slugger. That's what we say in New York.
Okay.
A baseball bat. Exactly. And of course, you know, when you're running around with a bat smacking zombies, you're going to, you know, guts and all kinds of skin fragments are going to fly all over the place. So you need, number four, wet wipes, right? I mean, you got to get that stuff off you. You don't want to become contaminated. And then when you're done running and you're taking shelter for the night, obviously you're going to need something to drink, so you're going to need water. You got to, you know, stay hydrated, okay? And of course, when the water comes up and it's back out to the open to try to find a place to stay or food, you need to wear a bandana over your face because obviously it's going to stink and there could be zombie germs all around the place, so, you know, that's very important. And as you're making your way through the woods or through an urban area trying to get to some place to save your food, we highly recommend you wear thick clothing, right? Because if a zombie does get his hold of you, it's easier to bite through a t-shirt than it is through a leather coat. So 93 degrees in summer, wear a coat, heavy clothing. And of course, number eight just makes common sense. Take a defensible position, such as behind a fence or a burning car or your buddy or something like that.
I don't think you should stand by a burning car, Rich. That would probably be counterproductive.
Okay. Well, you know, if you watch any of the zombie movies, the essential, which is number nine, which is a pistol, a handgun.
Yep.
So when they do get too close, you know, you're going to need to have something. Now, this one's a little weird, and number 10 is an object of affection. I'm thinking that essentially this is just for sanity, that you need to keep things in perspective, so have an object of affection, such as a female or male, whatever you're into. I don't judge. So, you know. So if you stick with those 10, you will make it through the zombie apocalypse.
Do you need those anti-zombie rounds for your 9mm?
You know what? I'm thinking just a regular practice round would probably go right into the brain of a rotting corpse versus having hollow points that expand on impact.
Okay.
Do not underestimate the power of the wet wipes, because when I watch these movies about people living like that, that is one of the things I think. How do you go to the bathroom? Well, I know how you go to the bathroom, but what do you do when you're finished?
YouTube it.
Did you ever see The Book of Eli, the movie?
Yes.
No.
Did you remember the scene? That's how he cleaned himself when he got up that morning from sleeping. He pulled out those wet wipes.
Yes.
What he was cleaning himself with. Just saying. Just sharing.
What happens when you run out?
And you get pinworm.
Oh.
And other disgusting things. It's good old zombies. It's such a part of our culture now. I work with a few during the day.
Pete, you have
going off the application thing for the telephone, we were fooling around with that fake Ovilus thing on the iPhone again.
Oh.
At Fort Ontario. And just the randomly weird stuff that thing comes up with, like buggy bumpers. This, that, and other. It's like, where does that come from? You'd think they would have it pre-programmed with words that would make sense if it's going to.
2,048 words. And out of all those words, very few that are relevant. Now, we have a stack of books over here, Pete. And we're looking at these books. And we have fortune telling, haunted objects, reason and believer. Tell us about these books. What's up with these books?
Well, every year I go to the Berry Hill Bookshop for their annual sale. And the owner there, I've known him for about 20 years, Doug. He keeps a lot of stuff aside for me. He knows my weird interests between local history and
the paranormal.
I was able to pick up another stack of about 10, so there's some reading for the winter months.
These are old books.
You almost have to go old school in order to come up with new stuff now, I would
think. Yeah.
Reason and Belief, Our Invisible Friends, here you go. a scientific experiment with the spirit world from the 1950s.
Oh, boy. There's one here that I'm looking at called Wisdom of the Mystic Masters. And, I mean, this is stuff that, you know, you can't make this up. This is the real deal, the old school stuff back from, you know, anywhere between the 40s and the 60s. If you go to your local library and you look at the occult section or the paranormal section, I would bet that 90% of what you're going to be looking at is stuff from the 60s. I mean, there was a huge movement towards spiritualism and mysticism and exploring the occult back in the 60s and 70s. And that's where probably 90% of this content comes from. The stuff today, you know, I hate to say it, but it seems very shallow. It's largely based off of what people see on TV. It's largely based off of the locations that have become popular. And I don't know, there's really no substance to it. This stuff all comes from the worlds of psychology, parapsychology, sociology. There's medical stuff involved here.
Like this one here, ESP, a scientific evaluation. They don't even talk about ESP anymore in the paranormal.
No.
And this is like a 300-page book from 1961.
Yep.
Which is why sometimes you have to delve into the older stuff.
You have a cool book there called Crystal Communication. Is that what it's called?
Communion.
Crystal Communion. Love, Light, Meditation. Sorry. Well, I mean, this one may be a little bit hokey, but there's a whole lot of stuff out there about research with crystals and the paranormal. And in this book, there's tons of pictures of all these different crystals and, you know, how they impact one's meditation and the physical world around us. So if there's anybody out there that uses crystals for divination or for meditation, there's a method of EVP capturing that uses a crystal, somehow connected to the microphone input port of audio recorders. So a lot of these old books, you know, they're still pretty cogent.
Here's one I got just for fun. Techniques of Hypnotherapy.
Oh, boy.
The uses of hypnosis in dermatology, gynecology, and obesity.
Wow.
I can't wait to self-practice.
I don't even know how to... I don't know what to say.
Yeah, yes. We're looking at all these books over here. This is it's a good time.
And the best part about it, this stack cost me less than $20.
It's a good thing about old books.
You can't even get our book for that price.
That's right. I know.
Which, by the way, is available on BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon, or through us.
Actually, your book, I just actually read that last week. If the walls bleed.
If the walls start to bleed.
Start to bleed, yes.
How
thank you, Dave. actually, it was great reading. I mean, for those of you who have not read it and are interested in the paranormal, as well as learn about Pete and Dave's story, I highly recommend the book. Not only do they talk about their specific stories and how they got involved in the paranormal, what influenced them, but they also talk about technology. They talk about techniques of investigating as well as doing consultations. They also talk about specifics of environmental things that will happen that are related to paranormal activity. So it's a great read. If you want to learn more about the story, I highly recommend the book. It's an easy read. I mean, you can get through it in a few days, but it's very informational.
Well, thank you. That's a good recommendation for our material.
No, I did. I read it. You know what? And I thought to myself, I'm not going to recommend this book until I physically read it, and then I'll just give everyone the truth on it, and it was great. It really explains a lot about Pete to me. So now I understand.
Now you understand.
Now I understand some of his quirks and stuff.
Exactly.
That's why he does that.
And the foreword of our book... The foreword of our book was written by John Zaffis. So John's a good friend of ours, and he read the book, he recommended the book, and he wrote a nice little introduction for us, so we thank him for that.
So we got a couple 2-3 pictures in there.
Yeah, it's kind of like a family picture album, too.
We talk about all these people. I figure we should... These people.
These people.
We should put a face with names.
Absolutely.
Visit us online, Paranormal Investigator Radio.
Yeah.
Well, what we're going to talk about right now, guys, is a little bit of technology. Every episode, we like to spotlight one little piece of technology and try and explain it in a little bit more depth, just so that there's a better understanding of what's going on. So what I want to talk about today is illuminators. We are going to illuminate the topic.
Flashlights.
Well, yeah, those can be used as illuminators, too.
Wow, you're bright.
That was terrible. So what do you guys think? We have a few illuminators. Are they an indispensable tool or hokum?
You need them, but they're crap.
Wow.
Well,
have we really found one that is reliable?
No, we haven't. And that's part of the problem. I'm not going to talk about reliability, but I am going to talk about why illuminators are important in the field of the paranormal. And what I'm referring to specifically is external illuminators for use in photography or videography. There's a ton of groups out there that are doing really good videos, both as groups or at locations that they're investigating, or promotional videos. It's becoming quite a popular thing to do in the paranormal. So the thing that sets most of these videos apart, professional looking or amateur looking, is light. And light is just a fundamental underpinning of any type of photography, as well as videography. So, specific to the paranormal, the most common type of illuminator is the infrared illuminator, or IR illuminator. If you use any type of night vision camera or night vision scope or any type of night vision system, you're going to need an illuminator. Usually, there is some kind of onboard illuminator built in, if it's a video camera or if it's a photographic camera, or even if it's a night scope. There's always something built in. However, if you're in a big location, like a theater, for example, the little onboard LED is not going to be sufficient to illuminate that entire venue. You're going to need something more. So an infrared illuminator is going to be, your best bet. We here at the Rome Investigators, let's try that again, of the paranormal, we have a couple different types of illuminators. Pete mentioned that none of them have really been very reliable. We have a couple of really big ones that you plug into the wall. They're like 500 LED illuminators. You could put one inside a theater, and it will light the entire theater up like it's daylight out.
But would it last 2 investigations?
Yeah, that's the problem. They're very volatile.
And it was a pretty well-constructed, professional-looking setup.
Exactly.
Metal box.
It's just whatever components are inside it. One LED goes out, then 2, then 3, and then half the unit is out, and that's it. We're in the dark.
And usually you have to bounce that stuff off a reflective surface. Those were actually
too bright.
Bright enough to illuminate a room without hitting anything, which bouncing off, whatever your technical term is.
Reflecting.
Especially when it would glisten off the sweat that was on me, it'd blind everybody looking at the
LP. So it's very important to have an illuminator, whether it's a floodlight style like the ones that we're just talking about, or on-camera ones. But there again lies a problem. We have probably 4 different types, and a couple of them are just those tiny little cubes.
Those are about the most reliable, the Polaroid ones. But anybody buying them, like with the Frank's boxes, if they were manufactured after a certain date, they change the internal workings, and
yep,
they're not as bright or whatever the situation was.
But we had a few issues with those. Melting.
Yes.
Upon recharging, the battery and the components would get so hot that the plastic casing actually melted on a few of those. So you really have to beware. And likewise, because of that, it caused premature failure of the electronics. So they partly work or they partly don't work.
Like the one now where the light just stays on when it's charged.
The charging indicator, the light just stays on all the time now. We also have a couple homebrew style where we got them off of eBay, and it's just a plastic case that somebody built with a whole bunch of LEDs and a couple 9-volt batteries. Surprisingly, the most low-tech but the most reliable. Very long-lasting, very bright.
Especially once you added a little diffuser plate to the front. Got rid of that little circular spotlight.
That's right. Yeah, we took some of those, the fluorescent light grid diffuser material. I went to the home store and I purchased one of those panels and I cut it up a little bit and I duct taped it onto the front of the IR illuminator and it diffused the light nicely. It went from a blinding spotlight to a nice broad gentle illumination. So those are IR illuminators. Now if you're doing any kind of full spectrum work, you're going to need a full spectrum illuminator. And the full spectrum illuminators are not infrared, they're ultraviolet. They may have a little bit of infrared in them as well. But the thing that sets the full spectrum apart is that there is a visible light component to that as well. Some of them have white LEDs. Some of them have green LEDs. Some of them have red LEDs. Some models have all of them. If you have a higher-end full-spectrum camera, that's great. But you're not going to be able to get full-spectrum results unless you have an illuminator that provides a full spectrum of light to reflect off of. That's something most people don't realize. They buy the camera, they go out in the field, and they're not getting great results. So those are a couple different types of illuminators that are necessary. You can make your own illuminators at home. There's tons and tons of plans online for IR illuminators, UV illuminators, visible light illuminators, full spectrum illuminators. The one thing I didn't mention yet is the visible light illuminators. Usually when you're investigating the paranormal, you're in a very dark environment. It's completely black. So why in the world would you want a visible light or like a white LED panel? Well, if you've ever seen any of the documentaries on TV, you'll know that as it starts to get dark out, you start having a hard time seeing the people that you're videotaping. So with a white LED panel, you could bridge the gap between daylight recording and infrared nighttime recording. When you're in the field and you have all these tools, it's very important to have all of the tools. So if you're going to get into the fields of nighttime photography, professional photography, videography for both investigating for evidence collection as well as production, if you're doing promotional videos or any kind of professional or semi-professional work, the expenditure of equipment is substantial. You're going to be spending a lot of money on the cameras, on the video cameras, so you might as well spend a little extra, get a good set of illuminators that are going to work, get some diffusing panels, and try them out. Play around with it. Experiment with the different panels, the different illuminators in different environments, and I bet even in daylight, you'll notice that if you're doing video recording, it's helpful to have a visible light illuminator on. It'll help eliminate some of those shadows. So, guys, any thoughts on illuminators? We'll get your illumination on the topic.
Well, I've been looking at full-spectrum cameras because I've been doing a lot of photography during investigations at night, obviously, with a regular camera and a flash, which is sort of ineffective.
Well, and blinding.
Yes, to say the least. So I've been looking at a full-spectrum camera, and one thing that I noticed is that you can buy the camera, but you still need to get the illuminator.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure there's people who went out there and bought the camera and were taking pictures during investigations or at night, whatever, and thinking, God, this isn't working. What is wrong with this thing? Mm-hmm. I'm going to send it back. When the fact is, it's not going to work without the illuminator.
Right.
And essentially all they do to the camera is modify it, don't they? They take a regular camera and modify it so that it is receptive to full spectrum.
Yeah, inside the camera there's a couple sets of filters. There's a UV filter for ultraviolet light, and there's an IR filter for infrared light. There's some cameras where it's kind of like a sandwich where they have one filter, then another filter, and then the lens, and you could actually remove the filters, thereby giving you an ultra-sensitive full-spectrum camera.
And possibly damaging the camera.
Yeah, there's certain types where the lenses are laminated together. So the only way to get one lens apart from the other lens or one filter apart from the lens is to kind of chip it off. And sometimes you chip off a little more than you expect, and there goes the lens, and there goes the camera.
Yeah, folks, just get a camera. Don't go home and take your Nikon 3100 or Canon EOS and start to take it apart and chip it apart. Like Dave said, it's not worth it. You can get yourself at most of, on eBay too as well,
yeah.
You can get yourself at most of the ghost hunting shops that are online, you can get yourself an IR camera. But make sure you get the floods,
just
if you don't have, or luminaires. If you don't have it,
yeah,
it's going to be ineffective.
Buyer beware, though. If you're going to go on eBay or Amazon or any of those sites, especially with the full spectrum, there's something you need to watch out for, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago. If they're showing you preview pictures or preview videos of a full-spectrum camera and it appears purple, that's not a full-spectrum camera. That's what people are trying to pass off as a full-spectrum camera. That's something that has a purple filter put into it to try and modify what light is coming into it. That's not a true full-spectrum camera. A true full-spectrum camera will show you a slight purple haze, a slight pink haze, and if you have a white LED or a white illuminator, it'll show you the full color of whatever you're videotaping. If you're videotaping a person, they'll appear in their normal flesh tone. So beware. Look through a whole lot of different listings if you're gonna jump on a full spectrum camera. There's also a company that's called, help me out, Pete.
The one who made our camera?
Yeah. Oh, boy, I'm drawing a blank.
LG something?
Shadow Light.
Phantom Light?
Phantom, thank you. My goodness, Phantom Light. Phantom Light makes, in terms of the paranormal, they're probably the industry standard for reputable products for full spectrum and extended spectrum photography and videography. So if you're out there listening, check out Phantom Light. They sell their own cameras, both photographic and video cameras, and they also sell a full range of illuminators for IR, full spectrum, visible light, and various other combinations thereof.
So there are other brands. I've seen that actually Fuji has one that's being pushed at some of the paranormal stores, a Fuji full spectrum. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, like I said, you need to see some previews of what the camera takes. You got to look, and a lot of the cameras out there are capable of seeing into the extended spectrums, UV and IR. It's because of the filtering that we don't get those functionalities right out of the box. So somebody somewhere is going to have to modify that camera and take those filters out. Some cameras, it's easier than others, so that's why you see more of a specific model or brand when you're doing your searches. But always check out the preview pictures and make sure that it's not just a purple image that you're getting. That's what you don't want.
But they do make some nice scenic pictures.
They do make interesting pictures, yes.
When it works.
Whether you're an investigator, enthusiast, or ethereal spirit, we are bringing you the information from this realm and beyond. Paranormal Investigator Radio.
With your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeGrasse.
Peter Leonard.
So is it true, Rich, you're going to pump us up? You got an EMF pump for the group?
I'm going to pump everyone up. Yes.
Oh, boy.
What Pete's referring to is I recently went online, cracked open my wallet, pulled my credit card out, and bought an EMF pump. After doing a lot of research online during EVP sessions and photography and stuff like that, a lot of people made claims that they got better results with the EMF pump, which, if you really think about it, kind of makes sense. I mean, if a spirit is going to manifest or is going to communicate, it needs some type of energy. And if you put an EMF pump on there and supply them with the cocaine, they're drug addicts, if you supply them with the energy, then they can respond better, possibly manifest. So I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that? I mean, they're not terribly expensive. So, you're only talking, $25 to $50 in that range. So it's probably worth trying, especially for when we do like a Frank's Box session.
Just have to avoid prolonged exposure.
Yeah, I would say anything that is out there that people are using, it's worth experimenting with. You can't automatically dismiss something until you give it a shot.
So is that like a Tesla coil?
No. No, I mean, there's a lot of things. Yeah. There's a lot of things that could be used as an EMF pump. The simplest is if you have a fan at home, just plug in your fan, turn it on, and put your K2 meter up to it, or your digital EMF meter, and you'll see that the motor of the fan is putting out a diabolical EMF field. Clock radios can also be used as EMF pumps. Those, for whatever reason, peg the equipment.
So are you saying that's a fan without the fan?
What?
An EMF pump?
Well, no, it uses different types of circuitry, but what I'm saying is if you don't want to go out and buy an EMF pump, anything that has a motor will put out a substantial EMF field, pretty much on par with the EMF pumps that you could purchase.
Now, how does that differ from an ion generator and the concept and the piece of equipment itself?
Ions are different than electromagnetic fields. So the ion generator is a completely different device. Ion generators can typically be purchased as a kit, and they come in different styles. Some have an enclosure, some don't, but most of them are an array of small copper tubes, and a charge is applied to the tubes, and you can actually feel wind accelerating with no moving parts, and it's not wind like a fan gives off. It's just almost what a magnet does. It alternates a field and it forces the ions through the device.
So I'm starting to see a pattern here. That's like that fan that one company sells based on ions. I seen it on late night television one time. I can't think of what it's called.
You're not talking about the bladeless fan, are you?
No, it's a very famous company. They make an ion fan.
Dyson?
Dyson, yes.
Huh. Well, I guess my question to that is, I understand what you just said, the whole concept of it, but what is the use in paranormal investigating? What is the reason why you would want something during investigation to generate ions?
Well, I mean, anything in the paranormal field is not known. You can't definitively say one way or another that one piece of technology is going to produce results. We can't say if we turn on an EMF pump, we are going to have spirit activity. You can't mm-hmm. say that if you turn on an ion generator, we're going to get spirit activity. So these people are using these devices from all sorts of different industries and experimenting. So, I mean, the bottom line with any piece of paranormal equipment is it's an experiment to see if in and of itself it produces any results, or if in combination with other things, any results are generated.
Well, 95% of the equipment that we use in paranormal investigating is through another industry.
Absolutely.
Or a household item, like
correct.
A flashlight, things like that. So, you know, it seems to me that people have been experimenting with these and trying to get some kind of results. So with the ion generator, maybe the thought process is to charge the atmosphere
yeah.
so that if a spirit needs energy, that it can use the ion air in order to manifest itself.
Correct. Ionized air is one measure of, it's a gauge of whether the potential exists for paranormal activity. If the air is charged, so to speak, then you may have a better opportunity of capturing some kind of evidence. So pumping the air full of ions is one way of testing. Charging the environment with an EMF pump, that's another way mm-hmm. of experimenting. Like Pete just mentioned, a Tesla coil, that's electrifying the air in yet another way, though slightly related to both the ion generator and the EMF pump. So that is also an experiment. But it's worth noting that most people don't use a Tesla coil in paranormal investigating. They use a Jacob's ladder, which is slightly different, but along the same principle.
Learn something new every day here on Paranormal Investigator Radio with RIP, folks.
And I guess Steve also just picked up a pair of those rod thingies. Those
dowsing rods, divining rods.
So that'll be interesting to break out on the next investigation.
I say two things. I'm very, very skeptical about that type of thing. I know it's been used for hundreds of years for all sorts of different applications. And I've always been the first one to kind of scoff at that. But, and I tell people this all the time, this past year at work, in my office, we had some electricians that were coming through looking for a main power tap that was under the floor. And the floor has been sealed with concrete, and it has been carpeted over in the meantime, so they completely lost sight of where this power tap was. They came through with dowsing rods, and they actually found the location of where this junction was under the floor. Probably about 6 months later, the same thing happened, and the plumbers came through, and they were looking for a trap, a clean-out, and that also was covered up, and they had a slightly different type of divining rod. I don't know what the difference is. I'm not an expert in those, but after a few minutes in the room, they found where the clean-out was. It's weird, but I guess it works.
I guess we'll find out.
We'll find out.
Well, I was actually, this one's for you too, Rich. I was just here spending some time on the Scaricon website, which I guess we're confirmed now will be set up at, coming up at the Turning Stone Casino in September.
Yes, looking forward to it.
This list of celebrities is pretty much unendless now. I mean, right off the bat, I see the Batmobile.
Come on, the Batmobile's a favorite. Did you guys get a chance to sit
yes.
in that?
That's a cool car.
That was so awesome.
Ace Frehley?
Ace Frehley is... I'm a huge Kiss fan of days gone by, and Ace Frehley was it. I mean, he's going to be a big draw at this event, even though he's not horror-related, but somehow rock music, pop culture, horror, and sci-fi all seem to tangle into each other, so looking forward to it.
Kiss falls under paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on who you talk to. You know, I always wanted to believe that KISS stood for KISS, like KISS. But of course, if you went back and watched TV in the early days, the whatever church or whatever condemned them said it stand for Knights in Satan's Service or something
oh, yeah.
like that. So
that's right.
You guys heard that too.
Yes.
So not the only one. Okay, yeah. So
Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Again, pro wrestlers are getting involved in all these. I mean, if you go online and look up these horror conventions,
there's a wrestler coming?
You'll see wrestlers at all these.
Really?
Diamond Dallas Page does a lot of these.
Last year they had, was it Hacksaw? Jim Duggan?
Oh, that's right, they did.
Yeah, he was kind of a walk-in. He just kind of showed up. He sat out at the booth, but they were literally running, coming up to him crying. Oh my God, it's you! And I didn't, I mean, I was a wrestling fan. You know, years ago, but I didn't think that many people. But
what a weird tie-in, wrestlers.
The man was huge. Did you see him?
Yes, I did see him. He was huge.
Huge. Yep.
We got Linda Blair. I see.
The Exorcist.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting.
Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson looks like he's gonna be a lot of fun.
Ghostbusters.
The Candyman.
Kylie from The Walking Dead.
That's the governor's daughter.
Mayor.
Governor's daughter.
Spoiler alert.
Oops.
Of course, Jason Hawes.
Yep.
This is kind of a name I really like here. Deep Roy.
Deep Roy.
Deep Roy? Who's that?
He's Doctor one of the little Who? People.
Flash oh. Gordon. Star Trek. Felix Silla. From Spaceballs.
I think he's another one of the little people.
And, of course, Cousin Ed.
Yep. I think that's what he's most known for.
But
he's
how
been Cousin Ed.
How would you know, though? I don't understand.
Well, he knows.
How would you know if he was really... I could go there and be Cousin Ed.
You certainly could.
And the list just goes on, on. Margaret Kidder.
Superman, Amityville Horror.
Lisa Marie.
Sleepy Hollow. Ed Wood.
Yes. Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks, yes.
Our very own Alex was a quick fill-in in the movie Mars Attacks, if you don't know that.
No, I did not know that.
He was actually part of a group of Air Force people at Nellis that were hired as technical analysts for the film, and they gave them quick cameo shots in there. So when the Martians are attacking the Capitol, you'll see a gentleman with a mustache standing in front of a tank getting hit by a laser beam. That's Alex.
Really?
Yes.
No way.
Yes. You won't recognize him with the mustache.
I'm going to have to go home and look that up. He never...
We got to get 8x10s for him. Let him sit out there and do autographs.
That's ridiculous.
Scout Taylor Compton from The Runaways, one of my favorite movies.
Mm. And from Halloween 1 and Halloween 2, Rob Zombie style.
Robert Zadar.
Maniac Cop.
But my favorite, Tango and Cash.
Yes.
So that's this quite a lineup.
Amazing. And I'm skipping over many names. Kathleen Kinmont.
Mm-hmm. Bride of the Reanimator.
Jake Busey, Priscilla Barnes, Three's Company, too.
Yep, and she also was in one of Rob Zombie's movies, Devil's Rejects or Lords of Salem, something like that.
Scaricon is quickly becoming one of the Northeast's premier conventions for this genre, the horror, sci-fi, paranormal, rock.
Ooh, you got the Blair Witch Project reunion and the Human Centipede reunion.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if anybody is in the Northeast or even just the East Coast, if you're a fan of this whole genre, this is our fourth year?
Third
year involved. We've been involved with this since the beginning, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And Turning Stone Casino in Oneida, New York, or Verona, New York, is it's such a great venue. It's huge. So if you're interested... It's scare-a-con.net.
No, it's just scarecon.com.
Oh, they changed it. Yep. Scarecon.com.
Scarecon.com. Now, one thing to remember about this particular event is, in addition to the celebrities that will be there, and I know because pretty much I contracted and negotiated with just about 95% of them, but in addition to that, there's going to be movie premieres, film festival, award ceremonies. There's going to be Q&A. There's going to be presentations. And
we'll be there.
Yeah, and RIP will have a booth.
Zombie Santa.
Yep, Zombie Santa. And if you are not familiar with RIP or like to see us in person, please come by ScareCon. Most likely, Pete and Dave will also be doing a lecture there, too, as well, on the Paranormal Cousins. You'll learn a lot from them guys and see some of their evidence. We're also talking about having a Magic the Gathering card tournament, too, as well. We're trying to work out the details in that. So it's going to be a fun weekend for all ahead, and we hope to see you all there.
And then you also added in the promoters there at Psychic Fair, right, this year, which was never there before?
Yep, that's new. We have a Psychic Fair. And if you want to get a booth to be a vendor, you can get your booth right online at the scarecon.com website. Also, there's going to be an Artist Alley, which is going to be outside of the exhibit hall. And if that's just nothing more than a table, but that's also going to be available. So if you're selling, I don't know, jewelry or small knickknacks or something like that, and you're local and you want to come by, and you don't want to pay what it is for the booth, then you know, get something in Artist Alley. And also the Psychic Fair, that's going to be interesting. We should probably have a lot of psychics. Now the reason why we're going to have the Psychic Fair and we're going to have it off-site, not at the casino, is the fact that psychics and stuff like that is kind of taboo by the Oneida Indian Nation, so we'll be doing that off-site, most likely.
And this is a very large event. Rich, how many people came through the doors last year?
About 3,500.
Yeah, so this isn't just a small little, you know, couple dozen people are showing up. This is actually a mainstream Northeast event.
Plus, the Turning Stone just opened some new restaurants, clubs.
Oh, yeah, if you come up, and even if you stay for literally 2 hours at ScareCon, you can go to Club Lava, you can go gamble, you can go to any of the fine restaurants, they now have taverns there, and they just opened up a whole bunch of new clubs, a country western club, a piano bar, a rock club, and parking's on site, there's a parking garage, there's a hotel, a couple hotels there, there's golf, so you can come up and actually not even go to ScareCon and spend the whole week at the casino.
This is when, September
13th through the 15th.
All right.
And golf, they are known for. So if you're a golfer and your wife's into the paranormal, dump her at the convention and
there you go.
Play on the course that Tiger played on.
Yeah, it's a PGA-accredited course.
It's an amazing course.
So can we sell dimethyltryptamine there? Is that
DMT. What do you know about DMT, Rich?
Nothing, other than Pete just tried to pronounce it.
We're going to have a special guest maybe on the next show talking about the paranormal drug, DMT.
And this is in no way an endorsement to consume any kind of substance, but there's a lot of controversy and a lot of misinformation going on about this particular drug, and it's worth pointing out the risks and the side effects, I guess, for those people who are thinking about experimenting with this drug, and we hope that nobody does.
I mean, having read that article that he wrote, I mean, it was something I never heard of, but after reading it, it was very interesting.
Yeah, it's a very unique... the people that have taken this drug have...
More popular in South America and American Indians, I believe it was.
Right, yeah.
And of course, I got to laugh at this one I just found going through. Ghost groping. British grandmother complains she's being touched by a pervy poltergeist.
Oh, dear. Only the Brits.
Well, if they were a perv in real life, they're probably a perv in the spirit world.
That's it.
She described it as having octopus-like hands.
Ribbed for your pleasure.
Oh, no, he didn't.
I don't really know where you go from.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Like,
oh, God.
That's just wrong.
You know, there's a website called paranormalnews.ws, and I know there's actually a lot of really good photos that you can take a look at that people have claimed to capture. Like, here's a picture that a teenage girl captured on her iPad, the ghost of a man wearing a top hat. Believe what you want, fake or real, but there's a whole bunch of different photos and videos that are on there that you can kind of review yourself and, take a look at it. And, I always look at everything as a skeptic and, try to think, okay, there's probably a logical explanation of what I'm looking at versus a ghost, but having seen, things in my investigations, it's a little bit more believable that it really could be something real. So, use your own discretion and see for yourself.
Can we start the movement really right here? This will take up a whole show, but an orb is a piece of dust when it appears in a photograph.
Yeah.
If you see it with your own eyes, we need to start calling them apparitions. Whether they're in the shape of a body or a little ball, I think we need to call them apparitions just to start differentiating from orbs.
I think this is going to turn into a conversation for the next episode, right?
I believe so.
All right.
Well, I think I've run out of stuff.
We want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. We hope that you've learned a thing or two. Remember, we're here on the BBS Radio Network every other Tuesday evening. So if you have any questions for us, please visit our website, paranormalinvestigatorradio.com. You could find us on Facebook, Rome Investigators of the Paranormal, or you could go to romeinvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
Or if you wish to be a corporate sponsor, then we can be on every other week.
Every week.
Every other week. And every other week. So we could be on all the time.
All the time.
Enough sponsors and we could be on daily. Of course, we'd have to have much more information to share with you on this.
That's right.
Just load me up on sugar. We'll just go for it.
So for Paranormal Investigator Radio, we are...
Peter Leonard.
Richard Nicodem.
And I'm Dr. Dave DeProspero. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.